All right, guys, welcome back. This is Yankees Unload. I'm Jake Ellenbogen. He is Gary Sheffield Jr. And man, I'm glad to be back, Gary, because I feel like we haven't recorded in a century. I don't like when games get, you know, rained out, as I'm sure a lot of people don't. But I really don't like it after an off day. I feel like it's just getting cheated during the, you know, the MLB season. It's like, that's not the agreement here. You know, it's,
well, we had a routine. I mean, we did a show every day. So when you give me an off day and then we talk about a rainout, and then we didn't even have certainty that today's game, I kind of told you that I thought these games were going to be played. Luckily they were, but I mean, we didn't get to see a crowd out there. I mean, it looked like a spring training game or exhibition. No, I don't know what you would want to call it, but yeah. I mean, we'll kind of dive into the lineups, but we need to start off with game one. I thought Luis Gil in general, Jake, Luis Gil didn't have his slider at all today. And no. The broadcast was kind of talking about how he's going to work through this start. And he started going back to the fastball. I know everyone talks about his changeup. Changeup's probably his best pitch. But as time's gone on, Luis Gil's really decided that this slider is his favorite pitch. But when it's not going, that doesn't mean it's time to just sit on changeup all day. He goes back to number one. His fastball is his best pitch, in my opinion, despite him loving that changeup. And once he honed in that fastball, I thought he actually grabbed control of the game towards the third or fourth inning and luckily gave us some length.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely, you know, hats off to Aaron Boone for letting him get you those five innings pitched, because I was a little concerned that they were going to take him out.
We didn't think he was going to do that.
No. And you know, the two hits given up, I mean, Luis Gil made up for that with five walks, let's be honest here. But I think the thing that really separates great pitchers from good pitchers is, even when you don't have your best stuff, how do you get out of a game minimizing the damage? And he did that. I mean, he got through five innings with no runs, okay? So not his best stuff, and he can come away with a W, his 12th of the year. Not his best stuff, and he can come away with six strikeouts. Not his best stuff, and he can come away with only giving up two hits. And ultimately, giving the Yankees, like you just mentioned, some length. Not a ton, right?
No, it was five innings, so we're not going to give him too much credit. But it's better than what we've seen out of guys like Marcus Stroman, where they won't have their stuff, and they'll give you three. Well, three innings and five innings, although it only feels like two innings, those two innings go a long way.
I absolutely agree with that. So it was good to see Gil doing his thing. It was good to see the bullpen do their thing, you know, throughout the day, just combining the bullpen, say, for both games. They only gave up two runs in essentially nine innings pitch total for them. So, you know, I thought it was a good day at the office for those guys. You know, Jake Cousins is going to want that home run back, you know, obviously, but he's pitched well for the Yankees. I'm not going to get too much on him. And, you know, De Los Santos didn't have his best stuff, but I still am intrigued. And I do think that they traded for him for a reason. I mean, he misses bats. He generates plenty of whiffs. And I think the most important thing is he's got the stuff where, as long as Matt Blake can get him to stop giving up home runs, which he hasn't done yet with the Yankees, you know, but he's like second in all relievers in baseball and giving up home runs. If they keep that long ball away, he's got some stuff where he can make this postseason roster. So, yeah.
And I'm Jake, this many guys touch the mound as well. I mean, how much success do you expect to have? This is part of the reason why starters going length, and when a starter like Gerrit Cole, for example, last year's Gerrit Cole, you can kind of expect, okay, he's going to come out after probably seven innings, going to give us seven, maybe more. And part of what that does is it allows us, last year, where maybe Holmes and one other guy touched the mound, there are not a lot of moving parts to that. And that's the luxury that you have when you actually have pitchers go at length. And our starting pitchers earlier this year, Jake, remember that? We had 50 starts in a row. We went five plus innings. And now it seems like we're fighting to do that. So when people want to know, why aren't the New York Yankees winning regularly anymore? Like, why is this now? It seems like we're pulling teeth to ask for game two today. Well, if you look at the starting pitchers, the fact that we have to squeeze five innings, I mean, there's your answer right there. Luckily, we won game one. But as we transition into game two, I mean, you don't have Cousins, De Los Santos, Weaver, Holmes, all those guys we didn't expect to see in game two. So it changes the complexion of the game. And when you go in there, Jake, with a guy like Will Warren, who frankly, I mean, his ERA in the minor leagues was above six. No one expected Will Warren to go seven innings in game two. So what it told us is that we're going to see multiple guys again, three, maybe four or five guys touch the mound. That's not exactly a recipe to sweep the games for the day. Like, that's just not how this works. So Jake, I don't think we were high on Will Warren coming into this game. I think you've mentioned you kind of like his stuff, but you said like, this isn't obviously a great pitcher. I mean, it is what it is, but we really wanted to discuss, especially moving into game two, and it was Austin Wells. Austin Wells was the guy we wanted to discuss because we didn't see him. We didn't see him in game two, right? And Narvaez, it seems like he's been a good option behind the plate. But Jake, as you've said, Austin Wells seemingly is our third most reliable offensive option. He's a guy who's cementing himself in the middle of the order. Obviously, the Yankees trust him at the four spot. Why aren't we seeing him potentially in the DH spot or, as you've mentioned, at first base? Austin Wells has played these positions. Austin Wells, especially given what the Yankees are getting out of first base, they should be able to find a way to get creative in putting that bat in the lineup, but they haven't done that. So, Jake, I'm curious what you think, what everyone else thinks about being comfortable saying, well, Austin Wells is the catcher of our future, and then just waiting for game two and saying, well, if he's not going to catch, he's not going to play at all. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't get that at all either, Gary. I think especially with the way Wells has been hitting in the cleanup spot, I don't see why you'd want to, you know, change that. I mean, it's not like we've talked about before. When does Anthony Volpe get a day off? You know what I mean? Really, the guys who've been getting a day off, I mean, Verdugo and, obviously Glaber, you know. But aside from those guys, I mean, really, like, Wells shouldn't be getting days off, okay? If he's not going to catch, that's fine. Those are kind of non-negotiable. You can't have a catcher play all 162 games, no matter how much it would be great. It's a heavy position. I thought they did a great job on the broadcast, kind of explaining just why it's so impressive what Wells is doing, because Wells essentially has to know, he has to have a game plan. He has to catch 13 different pitchers. And he also, you know, has to understand that, like, at any point they could call up somebody new. So his homework is nonstop. He has to know where these guys want it. He has to have not only a game plan, knowing the batter who's going to be at the plate, but he also has to know his pitcher. And that's just that part of the game. Then you factor in having to throw guys out. You have to factor in the snap throw to first to keep him honest. You have to factor in all these things. And that's not even talking about the hitting element. So I understand entirely Austin Wells cannot do double duty every single day. But when he's not in the lineup at all, that is a problem. You are taking your third best hitter out of the lineup. Miss me with he's hitting 249 right now. To me, he's a 350 hitter currently in the position he's in. He's a guy with 1,000 OPS. He's a guy with the best on-base percentage outside of the big two, right? That is who he is. So I don't give a rip if he can't catch in game two. He needs to be in the lineup. Oh, well, you know, Stanton, I don't care. At this point, Wells is so invaluable to this team. I'm fine keeping Stanton on the bench when Wells has to DH.
And Austin, I mean, really think about this, though. We just assumed, like, oh, yeah, Austin Wells needs a day. Why is it that all these players need days when players from the past just never did? Remember that quote from Ernie Banks?
I understand.
It's a great day for a baseball game. Let's play two games. Why is it that everyone else is excited to play game two, but the New York Yankees treat it like, oh, well, we took game one, so let's treat it like, let's put out this lineup and hopefully steal game two? No, we should be the front runner to win game two. Coming into the game, our expectation should be all the best players play. And if you're hurt, you don't play. Yeah. That's totally understandable. If you're banged up, you don't play. But I will say this, and I'm sure Girardi actually would really agree with this. Catchers are always banged up. But you know what? Part of baseball and being a good baseball player is finding a way to play through injuries, right? Nicks and bruises happens all the time. And I've talked to my dad about this plenty. He actually asked me, he said, Gary, do you have any idea how often I've played hurt? And I know this, of course, right? This is my own father. I know when he's playing hurt. Most people think that because a guy's on the field, well, he must be close to 100%. Not really. Okay. Not at all. So my whole point here, there's been at bats my dad's had where he has a broken thumb and he's out there as a decoy and he'll take a walk. Now the fans will look at that and say, well, Gary didn't want to swing the bat, but they have no idea that 2 days from now, they have an off day tomorrow. He's going to tell him I have a broken hamate, right? So there's all these different things that go into the game, but Austin Wells is healthy. We're going to see Austin Wells tomorrow. So that's why, Jake, I bring this up, is that you can't sit here and make excuses, be like, oh, we're playing a game earlier today. You just had an off day. You had an off day and we had a rain out and you can't play two games today. He's 25 years old, Jake. So I understand that the Yankees don't have a ton of depth now at catcher, but aren't we in a position in terms of the standings? We're tied for first place now where your best players, as long as they're healthy, should just play in their position every single day rather than you trying to pull things out the hat, throw DJ LeMahieu at first base, and oh, we'll have Narvaez catch. Wells will get off his feet. Wells will catch tomorrow, catch a good game. Austin Wells is 25 years old. He's the catcher of our future. He's, at the very least, Austin Wells has cemented himself as a starter of this organization. Jose Trevino should not come close. Don't tell me what Trevino did in the first half of the year or the first half of his half playing time that he was getting. We figured out that Trevino's not hitting well enough to justify his arm behind the plate. That's what we figured out. Okay. Narvaez is giving us defensively. You mentioned this before we went live. Defensively, he is absolutely competent enough at the position and competent enough with his bat to justify taking the place of Jose Trevino. But when Trevino gets healthy, Yankees broadcast is going to tell us, well, they like throwing to him. Our pitchers like pitching to Trevino. I don't care who they like. Give me the best players at every position. Play them when they're healthy.
I'm with you. And, you know, I have to say, sticking with catcher here, Narvaez, okay? This is somebody who has experience getting on base at a high clip, okay? This is somebody who has a better arm than Trevino. And this is somebody that they chose. Essentially, let's be honest here, they could have gotten Jazz Chisholm without giving up Augustin Ramirez. There are always ways to get around a certain trade, right? They were okay. They decided they were okay giving up the 22-year-old catcher who has like 30 bombs this year because they saw something in Narvaez. Do you really think that they would have called up Narvaez if they didn't see anything in him? No. They probably would have just not traded the guy that they traded to the Mets in the first place.
This is very similar to Ben Rice, by the way.
Yeah, and also Ben Rice can play catcher. So they didn't actually need to call up Narvaez. They like him. That's my point. They actually like him. Now, here's the thing. I truly believe there is no reason Jose Trevino should be on this roster when he's healthy. There's none, okay? Trevino was doing no different than what he did the year he was an all-star. First half of the season, like I always mentioned. Trevino started off hot and then he cooled down. What was he doing when he got hurt? He was cooling down, already cooled way down. So you're talking about a guy who at one point was hitting 290 at the beginning of the year and his batting average is what, 10 points below Austin Wells right now? And Narvaez is hitting 300. And I understand it's very, very small sample size. But miss me with the sample size. You just watch the way he plays. You see the at-bats. He forced two walks in the nine hole. Okay? Like,
I like you believing in Narvaez, and I think that's great. I'll say this about Narvaez and Trevino. Because you said you don't think he should be on the roster. I'll say this about Trevino. As long as if he's on the roster, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. Where I have a problem is that the Yankees seemingly have committed to this idea that Austin Wells hasn't done enough, whether it be offensively or defensively, to justify playing the majority, the overwhelming majority. And I've said this on Twitter. If the Yankees play 7 days a week, okay, and they play all 7 days these next 7 days, right? I should see Jose Trevino once, max. I should rarely ever see him. But what the numbers tell me, if you look at Trevino's stats, if you look at Austin Wells' stats, you look at their at-bats, right? It took Austin Wells a long time to pass Jose Trevino in bats. Why? Because they were splitting time. They were playing every other day. What are we doing? What are we actually talking about here? These are not similar players. If you watched, even when Austin Wells wasn't hitting well, right? His batting average was low, slugging percentage was low, on base was low. We were looking at, man, we watch this team every single day. Why does it feel like Austin Wells is playing so well? But his numbers just tell a different story. And that's when you came in and said, I really believe in him long term. Now, part of that was you saying, I feel like he's making hard contact consistently. That's part of baseball. But I said, I can't just trust in hard contact all the time. You still have to get hits. Long behold, it turned around. Instead of just making hard contact, he started making hard contact that was now falling. Now that hard contact was going in the seats. So when I'm watching your bat materialize right before my eyes, and then I say, okay, this bat is worthy of being a starting catcher for any team in the big leagues. Now, what about the glove? And we started looking at things like Baseball Savant, right? We started using measurables to determine, well, Trevino's on the field because of his framing. That's what they told me. His ability to frame pitches, second to none. I said, okay. And I looked at it, the numbers backed that up. But you know what the story said about Austin Wells on the same topics? Almost second to none again. Framing, excellent. Blocking, excellent. Throwing, excellent. And our Narvaez? Narvaez throws excellent. Pop time, incredible. So when you tell me these things, part of the reason why we said Jose Trevino shouldn't be on this team is because he can't throw. This is not a knock. I'm not trying to, this isn't personal for anybody. This is baseball, okay? This is sports. It's supposed to be fun. If you can't throw out runners, why would I put you on a postseason roster? What do you think the team's going to do? These games are going to be one-run games. What do you think the Philadelphia Phillies are going to do when they see Jose Trevino behind the plate? They're going to tell their team, hey, Trey Turner, you need a run. All these players, if you have the ability to run, run. You're not looking at Austin Wells behind the plate or Narvaez behind the plate and saying, man, that's a clear weakness back there. We need to take advantage of it. This Yankees team cannot afford to put guys on the field because players say they like pitching to them. You put guys on the field because they have enough strengths with as little weakness as possible. Because we've seen over this last 15 years, your weaknesses will be exposed in October. Every single one of these teams, their weaknesses will be brought to the forefront. And it's a matter of which team has the least amount of weaknesses.
No, I agree with that. And I think like the catcher is just so important. And when you have a hitting catcher, that's also athletic. I don't really care what Savant says about sprint speed. I think it's off. I really do. I think that's like,
You hate sprint speed. Yeah. You hate that stat.
I don't like it because I just watch Austin Wells score from first. And I'm like, well, then explain to me this 32nd percentile sprint speed. Why is my catcher scoring from first on a 32nd
percentile? 70, as much as speed is out of the game of baseball, to prove your point, Jake, 70% of the league, I know for a fact, can hardly score from first at all, no matter where the ball's hit.
Yeah. So like, there you go. Honestly just don't give a rip about the whole sprint speed thing because I don't think it's accurate. Like, that's just
Can 70% of baseball score from first base on a ball in the gap? I'm being dead serious. Really?
Like, I don't think
you
so.
Mean to tell me that 70% of Major League Baseball players can score on a gapper? I don't see it at all. I can tell you 75% of the Yankees roster don't even think about scoring on a ball in the gap.
No, I'll tell you exactly the players that I trust to score from first with a ball in the gap. Ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Austin Wells, Jazz, Ben Rice, Aaron Judge, if he's really motoring it, right?
Juan Soto. I don't think Aaron Judge scores at all on a ball in the gap.
You don't think so?
Nope. Okay. I think it's possible. Like, I think if the ball bounces around, they're going to score from first. But I'll tell you this. If Jazz Chisholm's on first base, just takes a regular leadoff, any ball in the gap pretty much anywhere, like we're talking about center field, right center, left center, any ball over there, he is scoring, right? Aaron Judge has to have some type of bounce where you're like, okay, he's got plenty of time to score. So this isn't me saying Aaron Judge is slow. He's not. But there are certain guys, like Anthony Volpe is another guy, right? Right. If you said, oh, Byron Buxton, what's that?
I think Soto scores. We've seen it.
No, he has scored. But is Soto scoring for sure on a ball in the gap? No, I don't think he's one of those guys.
I don't know.
I would never call Juan Soto fast. That's my whole point.
I'll tell you one guy I know isn't scoring ball in the gap.
DJ LeMahieu.
Not even him, Verdugo. I watched DJ actually try to book it down the line. He's just not very fast. Verdugo literally is so... Like, I think Verdugo actually has speed, and I just think he does not care. That's what bothers me the most about Verdugo.
Is it swag or is it just he's too cool to do this? You're playing for the Yankees. I mean, he doesn't run very often. Like, real
sprint? What do you remember from that Tigers... when they lost to the Tigers in the playoffs, what do you remember? What was the final out? You got to remember this. It was Robinson Cano practically walking to first. Grounds out, that's the game. That's the series. Yankees are eliminated by the Tigers in the playoffs. Robinson Cano, I have this etched in my brain as a kid, was walking. That's the series. That's your season.
Yeah,
you can't run that out. So, yeah, I mean, to me, that's where I'm at on Verdugo. That's the type of player he is. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I mean, it's his choice. You know,
I wonder what that's about, really. Like, it really, if we got deep down into it, think of it this way. Alex Verdugo, who's objectively swinging a much hotter bat, right? So we're thrilled about it.
Yeah.
Verdugo wasn't running in Boston, so much so that his manager actually brought it up, and he didn't bring it up in the locker room, right? Where a lot of that was part of the reason why I was critical of Alex Cora, because I felt like just pull him off the field. You say, hey, that's unacceptable. But then when you go into the locker room, you say, get it together or you're not going to play for us. It's that simple. Yeah. So once that's happened, right? And it did. Now you were essentially you were traded away from Boston because you didn't bring it every day. That's part of the reason why Boston traded him. Now, when you go to New York, you would think, right? Like, and if most of us could be Alex Verdugo, we would tell ourselves, I'm going to be my best self when I get there. I'm going to be running out balls. Well, don't you know, when he got here, he just hit well, which he was doing in Boston the first half of every year he ever played. And then they tell us that he falls off a cliff offensively. But that wasn't the reason Boston got rid of you. Boston got rid of you because you weren't bringing the energy and the fire that they thought you should be, right? The Dodgers were okay trading you to Boston, right? And you have to wonder, what is that? What is it about this player that's getting them to be so comfortable moving on with you? Because right now, everyone has to assume Alex Verdugo won't be here next year. So you know what that means?
Oh, yeah.
That means Alex Verdugo is going to turn into a journeyman. So is it that when I watch you play, right? So why is it when you hit a ground ball down to second base or you hit a ground ball to shortstop, why is it that I have to talk to you or bring up your hustle every week? Robinson Cano and he are just absolutely of no comparison. Robinson Cano is going to hit 295 for my team and hit 35 bombs. So when you're doing that, I'll let a ground ball to second base. Like Juan Soto today, he didn't leg out a ball to second base. He was barely moving over there, right? Now, most of the time he hustles, but on one occasion today, he didn't move at all. It was very Verdugo-esque, but no one talks about it. You know why? Because he's hitting 300, his ops is 1,000. When you start doing that, I'll let it go.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I don't know. I think it's magnified for a few reasons. When you see Austin Wells booking it from first base and he's scoring, catchers notoriously are known, anything in the gap and you're on first base, you're probably getting to third, right? Like, you're not scoring on that. He did. And he does. And same thing with Ben Rice. But the thing that's the most eye-opening is when you have a player that's playing the same position as Verdugo. And look, I don't want to like trash Verdugo. I thought today Verdugo was good. He had three hits today. He had an RBI. You know, he scored, I think, three runs.
He has value for this team as long as he's hitting. He doesn't have to run at all. As much as we're asking him to run down the first base line and try and make a difference with other things other than your bat, when his bat's awake, he will always have value for this team. Because right now, the job that he's got, he's splitting time at leadoff with Austin, right? With who was he splitting time with?
Glaber.
With Glaber Torres. There you go. So they're splitting time at leadoff. So if Verdugo's swinging the bat, he's on base for Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. He's making an impact right there. But what if he's not swinging a bat? He's useless. So that's our whole point, is that you're putting a lot of pressure on that. You're putting a lot of pressure on that bat. You really are.
It's wicked frustrating because you see on the other side and you see Kevin Pillar and you're like, that dude hauls ass every single play, every single grounder. You're like, now that's a guy I can respect.
And he's retiring this year, by the way. He's getting his 10th year of service time and he's gone. So you have to be happy for guys like that, because even in his days in Toronto, those are guys that you can rely on. Like, they might not be the best players in the world, but they're really good dudes to have on your team. Like, you can expect them to work hard. Brett Gardner. Thank you.
Never the best player on the team, but you have to have a Brett Gardner to win the World Series.
Yeah.
I'll always stand by that. You have to have guys like him to win a World Series. And I have my concerns about Verdugo. I really do. I mean, I could totally see a moment, World Series, ALCS, whatever. And if he's hustling, he's able to beat out a double play that scores a run, a crucial run. But if he's not hustling, that's a double play. The run does not count. I can see that easily coming to fruition.
Oh, you can see that happening in a postseason series?
100%. And
you want to know, I don't think that would happen. I would say... Okay, so I'm happy that we're on both sides of this, because there are going to be people who agree with, obviously, it's all covered. Alex Verdugo, I think, is a smart enough player where he's in a postseason series. If there's, say, a guy on third base and runners on the corners, if he hits a ground ball with one out, I don't think he's lazy enough as a baseball player and doesn't bring it enough to where situationally he won't know when he has to run. But here's what upsets me and where I think it will hurt the Yankees, is that if Alex Verdugo, let's just say there's two outs, nobody on, and we've seen this 1,000 times. For those of you who have watched postseason baseball, you can vouch for this. Nobody on, two outs, they've got the ace going on the other side. You slap a ground ball. We've seen it from a bunch of players. Slap a ground ball. Everyone expects the play to be made. It's booted, right? High pressure. Ball's thrown away. Well, that error turns into a two-run homer, and that might be the only runs you see all day. That might be it. And that's why there's such an emphasis on effort. And I also hesitate to get so hard on these players about effort, because you do have to remember, this isn't the NFL. This isn't 17 games. We'll see you next Sunday. Maybe a Monday night, everyone's watching. But you have a huge downtime. No, there's a game tomorrow, and people expect you to run out everything every single day for 162 games. It's a lot, plus postseason. So I understand it's a lot, but we've got to keep in mind here, this is still baseball. We're playing a kid's game. When you hit a ground ball, you might negatively impact your baseball team to the point of no return in the postseason by not running out a ball that you perceive is useless to run out. But the postseason's shown us, in situations you think don't matter, they prove to be everything. And that's what does worry me. So you think that he might not run out of ball, he knows he has to run out. I think he might choose this situation right here in this moment isn't an important aspect of this game, and it could actually be something that's a backbreaker for this team. So I am worried about it. And I also want to bring up another player that I think at least today people were worried about. And that was Jazz Chisholm. Jazz Chisholm struck out four times in the game, and then he also struck out twice, okay? In game two, it was at game one, he struck out twice, four times in game two. So you're talking about a player who struck out six times. Anytime you strike out six times in a game, it's a bad day. But Jake, I know you mentioned before we went live, again, is that he didn't fail to make an impact. And that's what I love, is that when people talk about the Yankees, oh yeah, they strike out. They either walk, strike out, or hit a homer, and that's the only thing they do. They're not good at anything else. Well, that's part of the reason why Jazz Chisholm was brought here. He struck out six times, and yet DJ LeMahieu goes the other way. Thankfully, he's starting to look like himself. We normally don't score on a ground ball single to right field from second base. Jazz Chisholm is. That speed changed that moment, and it changed the feel of the game. So I was happy to see that, because what it showed me, I knew Twitter, they were going to freak out about four strikeouts. Let's kind of, we just immediately go, oh, is he going to be the next Joey Gallo? Like, people, they tense up. I try to look at
number 13, the 13 curse. Good Lord.
Right. Yeah. So I try to look at, when you showed up today, you might have struck out a ton. Were you useless on the baseball field today? Did you have no impact whatsoever? For Jazz Chisholm, absolutely not. He impacted the game today. And so, yes, is he going to strike out six times tomorrow or four times tomorrow? He's not. But what he's shown us is he can and still help the Yankees win. So that's why I'm not panicking.
I'm definitely not panicking. Wanted to point out Gleyber Torres in that second game. He just missed one. And I mean, I kind of felt like that was the game when he missed it.
Can you believe I almost called that, by the way?
Dude, that was insane. We text all the time during the game, guys. So, you know, obviously. But yeah, he was like, I think he's going to crush this. And then, you know, the next pitch, he crushes it and just misses the home run. But I'll tell you right now, Torres looks locked in, man. He looks locked in. Every at bat, you know, I think since the benching, he has looked locked in, Gary. I mean, I think it's, notice no K's, a lot of contact today. Only one hit, but you know, he was responsible for one of the two runs that they had in the second game. I wanted to give him props, but I also wanted to point out something. You know, anytime, because we've talked about it. I mean, this is the 11th straight game where the Yankees have had at least nine hits. So the offense has really been doing their job. I actually don't put that much on the offense in this one. To me, when you start off a game and you're down 6-1 going into the third inning, your starter has absolutely shit the bed. I mean, the momentum is dead, Gary. There's no momentum. And they had opportunities. I get that. They had a bases loaded stint. They had, you know, two runners on. I know. The Gleyber, if he hits that home run, it's a completely different ballgame. Well aware of it. But the last thing I'm going to do is get on this offense that has been carrying this team since the All-Star break, if we want to be honest. And to me, Will Warren is not the best pitcher in the world. We're already very well aware of that. But to not get out of this game without giving up eight runs, to me, that was unacceptable, Gary. It was absolutely unacceptable. This Angels team is a joke. They're five games under 500 on the road. They're 14 games under 500. Their organization is just an absolute shit show. To lose this game when you know what's at stake. They win this game and they're in first place. Now they're still tied with Baltimore. Baltimore has the tiebreaker. Not acceptable, Gary. This is what we talk about. The Yankees, they won the first game. Okay, that's great. But when you're playing against the Angels, this isn't Philly. Okay, we would gladly take, you know, splitting a series, splitting a, you know, a doubleheader against the Phillies, against even the Red Sox, right? Orioles, I'll take that. The Angels, this is why the Yankees have the 30th strength of schedule. They have one of the easiest schedules the rest of the way. It's because,
you know, people
are on the schedule.
You know what people say? You know what people say to me? I totally agree with you. You know what people say to me every time? They say, I'll say, they got to win both these games. Stop telling me that we should just be happy we win one game one with our better starter out there. You know what drives me up a wall? People say, well, you can't discount the Angels. Yeah, the hell I can. Yes, I can discount the Angels. We're the Yankees. And you told me, yeah, we're trying to go win a World Series. Which team is it that's going to go actually attempt to win a World Series? This isn't May, okay? We're talking about we're late in the year.
Four times, and they lost 8-2. That's like their best hitter.
Yeah, so which series is it that I should have any expectation at all to go actually go sweep guys. When should that happen, right? So I'm not out here just saying, oh, well, the Angels should just go lay down for us. No, what I'm telling you is that the Yankees need to go out and earn it. And when your starter comes out and gives up six in the second inning of baseball, don't tell me your offense scored two and say, well, where's the offense? The offense had nine hits. It was very clear what happened to this offense. A, Austin Wells wasn't in it. That's one. Two, everybody in the offense, we were obviously inches away from a three-run jack from Gleyber Torres, but the point here is that the Yankees were trying to hit homers. Why? Well, you're down 8-2 in the fourth inning. So why would you think guys aren't trying to hit homers? You don't come back from 8-1, 8-2 from hitting slap singles the other way. You need to put balls in the seats. The Yankees know this. Okay. So very clear. Starting pitching is important. There's a reason that the Dodgers spent $325 million on Yamamoto. The Yankees spent $360 million on guys like Garrett Cole, right? Rodon, who people think, well, he's not worth $160 million. It's a ridiculous amount of money. Well, just being a good pitcher in Major League Baseball is worth $160 million. Blake Snell is going to opt out of his deal in San Francisco. He's going to get $200 million. So the point here, Jake, starting pitching is valuable. And when you don't have it, you're forced to throw guys out there like Will Warren, right? You've got Schmidt and Poteet hurt, forces you to throw guys out there like this. Warren's ERA in AA and AAA was over six. So for people who thought Will Warren was going to come in here and spin a ball, I know people are laughing about the Angels. This is still Major League Baseball. These guys are better than anyone that Will Warren saw in AAA, any of them. There's maybe one or two bats in every lineup that would crack the lineup for the Los Angeles Angels. That's the way this works. So I don't know what they thought. I don't know what the New York Yankees thought was going to happen in this situation. Based on who was pitching, this is kind of my expectation. I personally was hoping Warren maybe would be able to give him four, give up three or four runs, and then we would win a slugfest. But you give up six runs in inning number two, game over.
Yeah. And I mean, I texted that to you once he gave up the grand slam. I was just like, game over.
You text me game over.
And then I have Yankee fans. Love you guys. But I had Yankee fans like, no, it's only the second inning. No, it's Jover. It's so Jover. It was way beyond. I mean, like, you can tell when the Yankees are going to lose. You can't always tell when they're going to win. And this was a game right away that did not feel good. Will Warren in the second inning just gets absolutely trounced. And yeah, I mean, you know, he got himself into some bad, situations. And, you know, all of a sudden, I mean, the first inning was fine. I had no issue with his first inning affair. None at all. But that second inning, Moniak, single into right, scoring Pilar gets you up 1-0. Then you and I are talking about it. Well, if he only gives up two runs in this inning, like, we can live with that, right? So then he walks in a run, which, by the way, I have to give Warren some defense here. How do you not call that on 3-0? That ball.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible. Right? Well, Major League Baseball has said, I'm pretty sure I saw this, maybe it was a fake report, that robot umpires are on their way, maybe not in the regular season, but I think spring training, they're giving it in 2025. I don't know what the holdup is, because we've had this system. For those of you who don't know, minor league baseball, they've been seeing robot umpires. Challenges, let me say this on air. I don't give a rip if robot umpires are here. I don't think it has that much of an impact on the game, but I'll say this, Jake. Every once in a while, it does. We should be able to determine we're challenging that call. That call that you just made right there has too much of an impact on this game. If we're talking about a 2-1 fastball and I throw a pitch and it's called a ball and I'm like, well, the situation is not that big, nobody's on, right? I'll let it go. But I cannot have a situation where I throw a 3-0 pitch inside the strike zone and you tell me, yeah, that's just a ball. That's a ball. I saw it as a ball and I can't do anything about it. I just have to live with the result that you told me when it was objectively wrong. You literally gave him a run. Now, to be fair, was he going to give up a run anyways? Most likely. But probably. The Yankees should be able to control that destiny without you calling a ball on a pitch that's objectively in the zone. So the Yankees should be able to go, yeah, I'm challenging that, which is this sign right here. happens in the minor leagues all the time. And yep. guess what? It takes them 3 seconds. They say, hey, Jack behind the plate. Yeah, you're dog water at your job. It was a ball. Ball. It's now 3-1. And you know what happens? Here's what happens. Will Warren, you know what he was going to do? He was going to throw that dookie cutter, and it was going to be a ball. And we would say, oh, Will Warren gave up a run. It wouldn't have affected the game. But Will no. Warren would have earned walking in that run. And that's what we can accept. And that's when Yankees podcasters say, hey, maybe we need a better pitcher on the mound to not make that happen, rather than talking about the umpire. So that's our whole thing. And for tomorrow, and I really want to put a huge emphasis on tomorrow's game, Nestor Cortez is starting tomorrow's game. And these last 7 games, Jake, he's gone 36 innings. He's given up 25 runs. He's struck out 36. Okay. So ho-hum, but his whip is 1.5. So obviously he's walking a ton of guys. He's given up a lot of hits, a lot of hard contact, and balls are going in the seats. He's going to have to be better tomorrow. If the Yankees want to outrun Baltimore, guys like this have to do their job. Nestor Cortez knows this. He just has to be decent. Give us 5 innings. Maybe you give us more. I'm going to say give us 5 2/3. I would take that. You give up 3 runs. If you can do that, excellent. I don't need 5 shutout because you're looking at the team he's pitching against and saying Anaheim's not that good. No, Nestor Cortez is also not that good. So you're not that good needs to be better than they're not that good. So let's do that and then expect the Yankees to go out there and put a hurt on their starting pitcher. Let's go win tomorrow 6-4 and keep it moving.
Yeah, and it's just a reminder. I mean, this whole Will Warren saga, if you will, is a big reason why the Yankees were interested in guys like Blake Snell. The guy on the hill tomorrow, Tyler Anderson, they were interested in. Jack Flaherty, you know, the list goes on. That's why that they were interested in a starter. Doesn't even seem fair that they need to trade for a starter because they found Schmidt and Poteet, but injuries happened, and what they went from having 7 capable starting pitchers and too many guys, almost a problem, if you will, to not having enough. And then, you know, the regression of not just Nestor Cortez, but the whole rotation outside of Heald.
Garrett Cole.
You know, Garrett Cole hasn't been Garrett Cole. You know, Marcus Stroman has just completely lost it, you know, the last few starts. And Rodon has actually pitched decently well. Kind of wish he was on the mound tomorrow. And I don't think there was any point during this year where I was like, I wish Carlos Rodon was on the mound. Tomorrow, I definitely do. But we'll see what ends up happening. Nestor's a much better home pitcher than away. The splits are laughable. He is not a major league pitcher on the road.
Would you say he's due? Actually,
I think he's due for a good start. Now, I also want to point out Tyler Anderson is a model of consistency. So Anderson could go out there and literally just give him 6 innings of like 1-run ball. And if Nestor has a game where, you know, he gives up that annoying home run at the end of his start where he's like, oh, he's all upset. It's like, how do you think I feel? Like, I've been watching this game and the Yankees were, you know, it was like 1-0 and like, okay. And then he gives up a 4, you know, 4 spot or whatever, and that's 4-1, and yeah, it's not
that's fun. All stuff related too. Nestor Cortez will go out there, the Yankees will have 4 runs and it'll be 4-1. We're obviously nursing a lead. Nestor Cortez will go out there and give up a 2-run jack. It's now 4-3 in the 5th inning, and you're just like, you're just deflated at home. And that's in large
that is the most Nestor thing ever.
It's in large part due to his stuff. You throw 92, 93, and then obviously every once in a while he'll rev up to 95. But in today's game, if you don't throw with a ton of movement, right, you don't have a ton of spin. And Nestor Cortez, and for those of you wondering, why is Nestor Cortez, you look at his stuff, he looks mediocre as all get up. It's because of his spin. He actually has really good spin, for those of you who don't know. But that's the reason he's in the big leagues. He locates well. He gets guys off balance. He has good spin. But you know what? You know what happens when guys with good spin, with not great stuff, throw the ball in the middle of the plate? Yeah, it gets hit into McCovey Cove. It goes a long way. And so that's why when he throws mistakes, Aaron Boone said, why do all of our mistakes go in the seats? Well, his stuff. That's your answer. Yeah. Which, by the way, since this show's about to wrap, I've got to give everybody, for those of you who have actually stuck around, I'm going to give you, since it was a mediocre day, I would say overall, we had a great game one. Everyone was thrilled. Austin Wells was awesome. We went into game two. No Austin Wells. We didn't see him. Nowhere to be found. I'm going to go with the most mediocre movie or series I could ever think of, and it is Transformers. If you stuck around long enough to be with us right now, give me Transformers in the comment section. I'll know you stuck around to see a mediocre series and cover this mediocre baseball that we just watched.
You know, you missed. It was right there. You could have gone with Face Off because the split.
Yeah.
But
that's true. I could have done that.
I like that.
But I wanted to go with a Michael Bay production, the most mediocre series ever produced. Was really good at the very beginning, but obviously as time went on, they continued to milk it and give us explosions and a bunch of nothing, right? Worst plot line you ever saw. So,
at Transformers. One point, I think Optimus Prime has a sword.
It's a joke. He could be in the new Star Wars for all we care.
So that's going to do it, guys. We'll see what happens tomorrow. What time is that game? It's 7:05, so a normal start time.
I think Optimus Prime could probably start tomorrow instead of in place of Nestor Cortez, or he can catch. So they'll have Austin Wells at first base.
No, Bumblebee will be at first base.
Perfect.
You gotta get everyone involved. Bumblebee
needs a day, according to Aaron Boone.
Yep, Bumblebee needs a doubt. That would be Aaron Boone. Like an android or just a machine. Yeah, you know, I think we need to get him a day off. It's really really too much on him. But look, Tyler Anderson, last five starts, has had at least 8 strikeouts in 3 of them and has done a really nice job of limiting runs. Only gave up 4 runs is the most out of those 5. So keep an eye on Tyler Anderson. We'll see what ends up happening tomorrow. I think an Aaron Judge home run is long overdue, though. I feel like he gets 42nd tomorrow. Those are my thoughts. Drop Transformers in the comments section below if you got to this point. And yeah, we appreciate you guys.
Yep, and like this video.